You are listening to the Pituitary Podcast, exclusively produced by Pituitary World News. I'm Jorge Facinetti. Welcome. Today, we are talking with acromegaly community president, Jill Sisco, about recent meetings the community had with the Food and Drug Administration, or as it's also known, the FDA. The FDA is a United States agency responsible for approving new medications. In 2021, as part of the FDA's effort to hear from patients and understand their experiences, needs, expectations, and priorities, the acromegaly community participated in one of these meetings. From the information gathered at this meeting, known as the Patient-Focused Drug Development Meeting, or PFDD, the FDA published a set of guidelines for drug companies to follow in the development of new drugs and therapies. Subsequent to that meeting, the acromegaly community requested a follow-up meeting, known as a listening session, to discuss the findings and further clarify the community's input. We asked Jill to tell us about the outcomes of the meetings. Here's our discussion. Jill, welcome to the Pituitary Podcast again. It's great to see you, although we saw each other a week ago, right, in Phoenix, almost, yeah. It feels like. Anyway, just for our audience, Jill had a fantastic meeting in Phoenix with the acromegaly community, and it was really well-received and tons of information. So we'll be publishing a few of the videos and the presentations soon on Pituitary World News, so stay tuned for that. So welcome, Jill. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Great. Today we're going to talk about the FDA patient-focused drug development program that the acromegaly community participated in, because as we discussed in the introduction, you did an initial meeting with the FDA that led to the listening session, which is what we want to concentrate on today. So why don't you tell us a little bit how, first of all, how that FDA original meeting came about, and what were the objectives for it, and how did it turn out?
So the main objective regarding the patient-focused drug development program was that I truly don't believe that the FDA has a good understanding of acromegaly.
Yes.
And it was to try to help them understand acromegaly better, our unmet needs and such. It was a 5-hour meeting.
Mm-hmm. I remember because I was in one of the panels, as you recall.
Right.
So, yeah.
And we brought in, world-renowned physicians in order to discuss, and plus patients from around the world to try to explain, their perspective of living with this disease. Mm-hmm. And, I thought that it had gone very well, even since... we have the meeting actually on our YouTube channel, and it's been viewed well over 1,000 times,
yeah.
which is pretty good for a 5-hour meeting.
Yeah.
And, fast forward to last year, and they came out with a document called the Guidance for Industry. And when I read that document, I was really taken aback, and mm-hmm. It was as if they didn't hear anything within our patient-focused drug development program, nor did they reference it at all, which was very concerning to me. Mm-hmm. And so whenever we got this document, for instance, on line 44 of this document, it says, and 43, it says, first-line therapy for acromegaly is a tumor resection, typically by transphenoidal surgery. Second-line therapy include stereotactic radiotherapy. And you and I both know radiotherapy is third line treatment. It's not second line treatment. There were some pretty significant errors in this document. And, you know, we submitted comments regarding this document, mm-hmm. but we didn't see any changes. And, you know, I knew that there were companies that were trying to bring drug development to the U.S. in the form of clinical trials. And I was told we may not come to the U.S. because of, you know, what is in this document.
Yeah, yeah.
So I felt like we really needed to do our part to try to invoke change.
So that's great, because I remember, and I will, we'll put in the article, in the podcast, the links to the, there's a report that can be downloaded that's available from your website. We have an article with a link to it on Pituitary World News. And there were some really interesting, like you say, some very interesting findings.
Another thing that they said within that document, mm-hmm. that spontaneous remission of disease occurs, which I had to laugh at.
Yeah,
because typically you never see spontaneous remission within acromegaly without medical intervention or a pituitary apoplexy
or
radiation.
Yeah.
And in this, they recommend that patients get off their medicine at least once a year, and that can literally do damage to patients.
Oh, sure.
Our medications, some of our medications help shrink the tumor.
Sure. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now there were you know, and I do fault the FDA for not you know, paying more attention to our patient focused drug development program, mm-hmm. because we did this in conjunction with the FDA and followed every single one of their rules to try to, you know, help in the knowledge of this disease.
Yeah.
And the fact that none of it was mentioned within this document, it was just really concerning. And so I felt like it was concerning enough that we needed to request also what is called an FDA listening session.
Yeah. But sounds...
It's not as formal as a PFDD.
Yeah.
But it brings a lot of the stakeholders back together. And, you know, they listen and then they're able to ask questions. Mm-hmm. And I had tried to push for it to be an in-person meeting, because I always feel like in-person is more impactful.
Without a doubt.
But they would not allow an in-person meeting. And so we went back and forth arguing about an in-person meeting for several months. But we finally settled on a virtual meeting. But I asked for them to leave their cameras on. And the majority of FDA workers did leave their cameras on, which I was glad. And, you know, many asked questions afterwards, so I know that they were paying attention.
Yeah. So let's get into that, because I think it's interesting that obviously any time, regardless of the findings, you know, the first meeting, the fact that you get 140 people in front of the FDA, or there was over 304 people in the meeting, the original meeting, and you have 100 and I guess it was 30, almost 130 people with acromegaly discussing their, you know, disease, their how they deal with it chronically. That is always good news, whether they listen to all of it or not, because for the first time, at least you're putting it in front of the FDA, and I think that's really helpful. So it sounds like the listening session, which was the follow-up part, was interesting in terms of what you heard from the FDA as to the reasons why some of that report was so, you know, I'm going to call it wrong, but at least not totally accurate.
Right. Yeah. You know, and I have to commend the FDA.
Yeah.
You know what I've learned in all these years of my advocacy? No one has to do anything to help us.
No, this is true.
And they don't have to even try to understand this disease. Yeah. And I really have to commend the FDA for taking out the time for trying to work with us.
Yeah.
You know, in order to try to make a difference, you know, not only did they listen to us, you know, they came back and they said, we do see where you're coming from regarding that spontaneous remission doesn't happen, which I'm glad that they heard.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that is a large thing, especially in clinical trials. You know, they gave us feedback that they did understand that they had said that our symptoms were nonspecific. And I said, oh, our symptoms are very specific.
So explain nonspecific for the audience.
So they meant nonspecific in a different way than what most people would take nonspecific.
Yeah.
They meant nonspecific as, yes, they understand that we have sweating and joint issues and, you know, the headaches and the hands and the feet growth and all of those things. But they said that, you know, there's a section of our population that also have those symptoms. Other diseases have those symptoms. And they were concerned that, you know, some of those symptoms could be carried over from people having other diseases. And my whole thing is, when you control acromegaly and you have good control, you typically don't feel those symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, and I told Teresa Kehoe, the director there, you know, I can tell the difference between an acromegaly headache and a regular headache. Yeah. And most patients that I speak to can tell the difference also.
Yeah.
That our symptoms are nonspecific, you know, isn't quite true, because although the regular population can have these symptoms, they don't typically have them to the extent that we have them within acromegaly.
Yeah.
And, you know, within acromegaly, especially with the long acting injections, we can get a shot and by the very next day, every one of those symptoms be gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, they really needed to understand how we know which symptoms are connected to acromegaly.
Yeah. I think it's something that you I understand intellectually the idea that you have a related condition that produces symptoms that may not be directly related to that you get this related condition because you had arthritis being one of them. So it may be difficult for the FDA to understand that patients, like you say, many patients can tell the difference between what a acromegaly headache versus a non-acromegaly. The question is, what do you do with that information once you have it to help somebody that's developing a drug?
Well, you know, I would like to see symptom control put back into the narrative.
Yeah.
Not just the biochemical markers.
Yeah.
Because we found that for many patients, you know, even when their numbers are within control, they can be symptomatic.
Yeah.
So I personally would love to see symptom control put back into the narrative. It wouldn't surprise me, and I know that you've heard this many years from me, if 100 years from now they come back and say, because of the discordance between biochemical control and symptom control are so different,
mm-hmm.
they find out 100 years from now that they should have been measuring other items.
You probably think that they don't know they exist yet.
You know, I personally believe that we get our symptoms from the ghrelin hormone. Mm-hmm. And I believe that because whenever I started going after it, literally the very same day, the gaps between my teeth closed.
Oh, yeah.
My pain decreased. My fatigue decreased. You know, I truly, you know, the ghrelin hormone has been tied to inflammation. It's been tied to sleep disorders. It's been tied to a whole lot of bad things.
Yeah, yeah.
No, in my opinion, especially for an acromegaly patient, ghrelin is the devil. And they need to try to control every single hormone within the growth hormone spectrum to do well.
Yeah, and you hope that all this conversation and all this amplification and all this, the stuff, the work that you do and the work that we do will lead to people to think about it and mm-hmm. and obviously get some research in that area to learn more about it.
So I can tell you that where it wasn't in the narrative many years ago, it's starting to be in the narrative now.
And that's what you need. So to get mm-hmm. somebody to design a study and say, okay, let's figure it out. if it's possible. Sometimes it's not possible, obviously.
Well, you know, the problem is, especially with that hormone, for years they thought, you know, Pamela Frieda did a study, back in, I think it was 2011. Don't quote me, but
no.
It was many years ago, and it's what made me start to target that hormone. But it showed that post-pituitary surgery in many acromegaly patients, it was 3 to 4 times of what was normal.
Mm-hmm.
And so many patients think that there's something missing within their treatment journey.
Yeah.
And that's when I myself started focusing on that.
Yeah. And whenever you talk about, you know, gait weighing and weight control and metabolic mm-hmm. rates and all the rest of it, you know, all of that is, in my opinion, as well, underserved. I obviously mm-hmm. don't have the answers, but I would certainly it would certainly be good to see more research in that area, no doubt.
Yeah,
no
so doubt. Many patients with acromegaly gain weight.
Yeah,
you know, initially,
precisely.
Right after surgery, they lose weight.
Yeah.
But within 6 months to a year, that weight just starts piling on. Right. And when you stop to think about it, you know, the science is there. What do they do whenever kids are growth hormone deficient before they actually put them on growth hormone mm-hmm. injections? They say, feed them, make them start drinking Pediasure, and everything. And you attend medical meetings just like I do. Everything goes in a feedback mechanism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we have to remember that.
Yeah. At least, you know, at the very least, develop the right partnership so they mm-hmm. so just like the FDA the companies are listening to, you know, the day-to-day struggles of people so they can focus their research on something like that. But
well, you know, and we're very lucky.
Yeah.
You know, acromegaly is a disease that has a lot of attention on it.
Yes. Yeah.
Because, you know, companies will go in and they'll get the indication for an orphan disease, and it kind of fast tracks it through the FDA, hopefully, in order to help mitigate cost. But then a lot of our drugs are approved for neuroendocrine tumors, you know, the cancer. And, you know, so many of these companies in rare never see a profit. But in acromegaly, there's a potential for a profit because it can be turned over to, one of the potential cancer drugs.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. So let's go back to the FDA, the listening session. Tell me how that went in terms of, you know, how was it set up, and what are the cool things you heard? If there's anything, any update you can give the audience on. Maybe as we move forward with hopefully more drugs and everything else, how that may have influenced the development of those drugs, or at least the way they think about the disease.
Well, you know, so initially I had a contact with the FDA, and we would have monthly meetings.
Yeah.
And they sent out invitations. And I also contacted several people that I know within the FDA. And I'm told that typically within one of these listening sessions, there might be 6 to 8 FDA partners mm-hmm. within those meetings. And I do believe we had 18, if I remember correctly, 18 FDA people on that call, which I was thrilled. We need as much focus and understanding regarding this disease as possible.
Yes, sure.
You know,
there's never enough information. I mean, there's always need for more information. That's for sure.
I was very concerned that the people that were on there weren't paying attention. You know, wouldn't pay attention. And let me tell you, by the end of there was the person that I was dealing with said, you know, there may not even be any question and answers. But I was thrilled to hear the questions that they were asking.
Yeah.
You know, and it showed that they were paying attention. They even asked regarding our long-acting injections. You know, we were talking about some of the issues with the long-acting injections.
Yeah, the drop-offs. And,
with breakthrough symptoms. And and they said, well, why aren't these companies, allowing these injections to be done sooner? Let's say day 21. or getting it approved for day 21.
Yeah.
And I'm like, your guess is as good as mine, because it would just mean more money for these companies. But the problem is, you know, a lot of insurance companies fight it. But, you know, I am team patient, and I'm all about trying to improve the quality of life of patients. And if it takes every 21 days, which, you know, for years I was doing the long acting injections and I had to do every 21 days, you know, I did everything that I could to get to make my insurance, you know, approve it. And they did back then. You know, fortunately, I'm on a daily therapy now. And so I don't have those breakthrough symptoms. But it is a huge issue.
Yes.
For patients. And you know, I can relate because I lived it myself.
Excuse me. You certainly hear it from patients constantly, as you know. So yeah. Is there anything you can share about specifically any of the interesting things you remember that they asked?
Well, I do remember that they did, you know, ask why aren't companies, you know, doing these long acts at quicker intervals. Another thing that they had said was, we hear you regarding spontaneous remission. And, you know, years ago, within clinical trials, there wasn't a washout period. You know, there are patients that have to be off their medicine for as long as 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And for an acromegaly patient, that is unbearable suffering.
Yeah, it can be, sure.
And you know, I'm hoping that they will end up removing that. And even in the document, it says that they take the final 6 months of data anyway. And if a patient is on a trial for a year, you know, and they're only taking the last 6 months of data, you know, why are they having to have a 4 month withdrawal before the year starts? It makes no sense. And so hopefully, you know, we not only, you know, had this listening session where they were able to ask questions and such, I told them that we were rewriting the guidance as to what we find, you know, medically responsible. And we're submitting that also. And I just hope that they'll consider it. It's not that I think that they will use our document,
yeah,
because I in no way, shape or form, think that they will use our document,
no,
but I think they will take it into consideration.
Yeah. So I think you answered my next questions a little bit, but I'll ask you anyway. So, what's the next step? Are we going to see a revised guidelines for the drug companies?
Correct.
From this meeting, and when
Correct.
Is that coming? And
we're submitting our
comments.
You know, our comments.
Yeah.
Our actual reworked document to them. And then they will put out a final document that companies will have to adhere to.
Great.
You know, there's been several companies, even within the last year, that want to come into the acromegaly space.
Yeah, and you know, we have a couple of drugs that are almost, you know, hopefully everybody has fingers crossed with to be approved. And that creates a lot of you know, momentum and noise, as we like to say. So that has other people paying attention to maybe other unmet needs or new technologies, new therapies, you know, whatever.
Well, I'm a big proponent for patients having choices.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Not more choices every single therapy is perfect for each individual person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so please, you know, I'm all for giving patients choices.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big proponent of step therapy. You know, I think that it just wastes a lot of time for patients. You know, especially recently, I did a CME program with Dr. Fleshiroo, where, you know, they talked about how you know, you can take the staining from the actual tumor and determine which medication would be best for you.
Yeah, without having to go through the that's a huge thing. You know, we had Dr. Asa and you know, they all talk about that. You know exactly what this pathology is staining. You know this, it's going to work better with one medication instead of the other.
Right.
Why are you making patients go through this step? No, of course, that makes
it. It's all about the quality of life of patients and trying to help them get back their quality of life as quickly as possible.
Yeah. I'm always thinking about, you know, the stuff that our medications don't do, which is, you know, make the tumor disappear. And we just recently read an article about a case that Dr. Blevins had in his clinic about the, you know, it's called the tale of the disappearing prolactinoma, which is, you know, it's amazing how that tumor disintegrates.
Right.
Really. So I always think, okay, you know, if you're going to think about new medications, let's focus on the research that may have the same effect as a cabergoline has on a prolactinoma. It does, like you say, it doesn't work on everybody.
And I wish that, you know, we had medications that could do that with an acromegaly.
My whole thing
is, if we can't be cured regarding this disease, give us a medication that allows us to forget that we're sick.
You
know,
And so many people, you know, sometimes feel that way when you get used to then. I always talk to people that, you know, they're just are saying, well, I never go back to the way I was. No, but you have a new normal. And if your new normal is good, it's a good quality of new normal, then you can deal with it a lot better, obviously.
Well, so, you know, on our website, acromegalycommunity.org, we have what's called the Faces of Hope.
Yeah, it's
the
great.
The whole reason that we have the Faces of Hope is because we want to show people, yes, you can start out here with this disease and with good management. And trust me, it's not easy. But with good management of this disease, you can end up way over here.
Yeah, and that's so important because so many people don't follow up on, you know, once sometimes they say, in practice, they say, oh, we don't see people for 2 or 3 years. All of a sudden, they come in really sick. So if we can say anything to patients, it's, you know, make sure you get your follow-up visits to see how you're doing.
100%. Make sure that you're getting all of your follow-up visits.
Exactly.
You know, a lot of patients don't even know, you know, the guidelines for treatment of this disease. They're not seen by a cardiologist. They don't see an ophthalmologist. They, you know, there's a number of things that are never addressed.
But I'm talking about just people following up on their pituitary disease.
Right.
You know, so it's that's a, you know, quite an issue in the clinical world.
Well,
so,
but I also think that, you know, there is a segment of our population that once they are doing better, they don't ever want to think about even, you know.
That's very true.
And they literally don't ever look back. You know, unfortunately, acromegaly is typically a disease that has to be followed up for many, many years. The reoccurrence rate is high.
So, but anyway, well, Jill, thank you very much for your time. This has been very, very elucidating. And I'm going to put the links, the appropriate links, so people can follow up and go to the acromegaly community website to see that Faces of Hope thing, which is great. We'll make sure that we have several links, but make sure we remind people. So thanks so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. And keep up all this great work.
We appreciate you and all the great work that you do.
You have been listening to an exclusive Pituitary World News podcast. Pituitary World News is a non-profit organization. We receive grants and generous contributions from our friends, supporters, industry partners, and other organizations who believe in our mission to educate, amplify the work of the many organizations and individuals working in this space, and increase the awareness of these complex, devastating conditions. Our goal through all this work is to help reduce the time it takes to diagnosis. You can help by sharing the articles, podcasts, and videos you see in our publication, our YouTube channel, social media, and podcasting platforms, And you can sign up for the latest news to receive a preview message whenever we publish a new article. Please know that your involvement helps, and we truly appreciate the support. To make a donation, please visit us at pituitaryworldnews.org and click on the donate button. Thank you. And thank you for listening.